Welcome to the IoT Security Chats podcast, where we bring you the latest information in cyber and IoT security. From asset and vulnerability management to incident response, hear the experts talk about the latest threats affecting connected devices and how to keep your organization safe.
Hello, everyone. My name is David Finn. I'm the Vice President of Chime, responsible for the three associations, including the Association for Executives in Healthcare Information Security. And it is my pleasure to be speaking with Shankar Somasundaram, the founder and CEO of Assimile. And Shankar, my first question, because we've known each other for more than a minute here, is when did you first realize that biomedical devices, and I know Assimile looks at everything on the network now, but the biomedical devices were the driver, and when did you understand that they were different? They needed different attention around security and a different approach.
Thanks, David, and a pleasure to be here talking to you. As you know, David, I mean, I used to run the IoT business at Symantec, and so this journey has been going on for a long time. So at Symantec, I spent a lot of time, and this was more than a decade ago. This feels like a long time now, but we started working with manufacturers at Symantec, medical device manufacturers. We started talking to hospitals. When we were doing that, what I found was that the manufacturers always viewed the risk on their devices very differently, the vulnerabilities very differently, the attack surfaces very differently from the way the health systems viewed that. And as I dug further and further into it, I started to realize that there was a lot of truth to that, because the devices were built differently. And as I dug further into why there was a difference in opinion, I realized there was some truth to that, because of the way there was a difference in the way the devices were built. There were the differences in the way the devices were configured. There were differences in the way the devices were connected. And because of that, it actually, the traditional security approaches in every dimension, whether it is inventory or vulnerability management or data loss prevention or net threat detection, everything needed a different approach, whether it is forensic analysis. And because they had constraints which were different from IT devices, they had certain things which were better than IT devices in terms of how they were hardened. Overall, you needed a completely different approach to security. And that's a journey. I figured out that in Symantec, this wouldn't work. And we did some things at Symantec at that point to cater to those nuances of medical devices. But I think to solve it in a bigger and better way, I decided eventually to start Assimile, to have a greater focus to really solve it across the stack. But it's that journey at Symantec which actually taught me that these medical devices were unique, and also understood why they were unique, and became clear and apparent that you needed a completely different approach.
Yeah, the risks are certainly unique and different. And moving from the device makers into the providers, I don't need to tell you that security is not just one thing in a healthcare provider. So how do you help, or how do you get different organizations to work together, whether it's information technology or information security or biomed or the networking group themselves? How do you get those all to work together to manage the devices, even though they have different set of risks they're looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. The first thing we have to realize is a lot of people in the industry see them as antagonistic to each other, that they are butting heads against each other. The first thing to realize is all of them are working towards one common goal. They all want to keep patients safe. They all want to make sure patients are enabled. The networking is doing it in its own way. Without the network, you can't have real patient care. Without IS, you cannot have patient care. Without biomed, you cannot have. So they all want to do it the same way. They have the same goal. So that's the good news. But they have different backgrounds. They have different experiences. Their understanding of the problem is different. And they view the data very differently. And that's where the difference of opinion arises. So it's more tactical rather than like an objective, which is more solvable. And to really solve the problem, you really need to show them the same data in different ways that they can understand it and they are used to. So for example, from a networking perspective, they understand more in terms of flows, in terms of policies, in terms of packet captures, forensic analysis. That's a world that they have lived with for many years. And that's a world if you show them, they understand the problem that way. From an IS perspective, it's really around vulnerabilities, mitigations, anomalies, threats. They understand it that way. And from a clinical perspective, it's really around, inventory is common, but they really want to understand good hold of inventory. For them, just because the device has an older operating system does not mean that it needs to be replaced. There are other factors to it. They have other factors like recalls that they need to consider, which devices need to be replaced from an operational perspective. So it's really different views of the same problem that they are all really looking and they all understand. And if you give them that, different views, but in a common format, in a common framework, in a common portal, then they start to see the other person's other side's view as well, because they understand that, hey, IS sees that just because it's an old operating system, you don't have to replace it, and here's the data. Clinical sees that there are certain older operating systems, you got to replace it. They also understand the networking challenges that comes along with it, and networking sees some of the challenges IS and clinical have to face. And so they start to better understand the problem each other faces. They also see how they can actually achieve their final goal, which is important. And then they start to better align, because now they're getting the data they want. They understand the challenges of the other teams, and they can still achieve the goals is what they become very clear using the data. And I think that starts to bring them together. So you got to solve the problem in three different ways or four different ways and display the data appropriately to the right team. And that really starts to bring the teams together to really solve the problem.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Shankar. The real risk, the ultimate risk, is that patient. And while we may have unique needs depending on where we come from, the bottom line is keeping the patient safe and the care continuous. So great points. I appreciate it. I do have, in my role at AHIS, I talk to a lot of CISOs on a daily basis. So I'm going to give you the number one question I get. How do you ask for budgets when the market is soft? And by that, I mean, we're technically in a recession. Providers are cutting back in order to respond to that. But you still need to provide the protection. So what's the answer to that? What's the trick to asking for money?
I think this is a tough question, right? I think I've been talking to a lot of CISOs and CIOs as well, and how are they asking for budgets in this market? And I think that I'll tell you some of the things that other CISOs are doing, and I'll talk about some of the things that we recommend to do as well. So one of the things that some CISOs are doing is they are actually listing out what are the risks that the organization faces by not doing something, right? They, on a month, like there are 20,000 vulnerabilities that get published. What is the risk of not prioritizing them? What is the risk of not like mitigating your highest priority risk? What is the risk of not monitoring for threats? And an average medical record, this, David, very well, better than I do, sells for tens of dollars, sometimes hundreds of dollars in the black market. So, an average incident is now $2 million. So there's a huge impact of actually not doing something in the environment. And some of the CISOs, CIOs have been able to quantify or at least give a rough ballpark of so many medical records. This is the risk we face, and these are the entry points we face, and this is why we need to do it. That's option one. The other thing that many CISOs and CIOs, what we recommend is do a benchmarking, a rough benchmarking. For example, at Assembly, we show you an organizational risk score, and you can compare with other organizations. And so basically what that allows you as an organization to do is actually compare how good or bad are you with the rest of the industry, right? And when you do that, you can actually, with the industry average. So when you do that, you can actually get a rough idea on, this is my gap in terms of security posture. And there's more coming on that, but this is my gap in terms of security posture. Because one of the things that board will always ask is, I'm spending so much on cybersecurity, how good is good enough? That's a question they actually stop. And so you have a chance to say, this is the gap I need to fulfill, and this is what I need to do. And that allows you, the benchmark allows you to kind of give a better quantifiable answer to the board. And the final thing is, a lot of people have been using attacks that have happened, systems that have been in the news, to kind of benchmark where they are, and they get information on where they are. And we help health systems with that, and what kind of security controls they had, what kind of security controls they didn't, and use that to understand what they need to do and understand the gap. And they're able to go to the board. So a little bit of peer information there also helps, directly from your peers, or we have some other information, which then allows to determine, okay, this is the gap in our posture, which could effectively cause us to have the same problem. and then get it really solved. So it's really a combination of making the board understand the risk inherently in a quantifiable form, really benchmarking against the industry to say, you know what, there is place for improvement and this is where we need to go. Security is never going to be perfect, but you need to keep improving. It's really raising the bar. That's all it is. And then finally, I mean, if you have real quantifiable data of what some of the controls that other organizations who have had unfortunate incidents, then you can use that also to kind of benchmark yourself. And some of that data is also available.
Very good. You mentioned vulnerability, so I'm going to go off in that direction. You know, with the mandatory reporting for device makers on vulnerabilities and issues like that, we're seeing more and more vulnerabilities being reported, particularly around the medical devices. But what do you do to reduce the risk from those vulnerabilities, especially when patches are few and far between? Even when they announce a vulnerability, often there's no patch for it. They're just warning you about it. And a lot of providers haven't dealt with network segmentation or micro segmentation. It may not even be an option to them. So what can a provider do who doesn't have patches and isn't highly segmented?
It's a great question again. So here I would say, you know, this is where I think goes back to your original question, right? Medical devices are unique, biomed devices, even many of the IoT devices are unique. You can't take the standard approach of IT, which is go patch everything, patch Tuesday, patch Friday. You can't, because very few patches are available. You know that. I'm hoping many of the listeners will know that as well. The other problem is segmentation, micro-segmentation. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but there are challenges in doing it. And even when you do it, like maintaining those segments, I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time. You know the challenges of doing that. We have health systems who are saying they've been doing segmentation for 5 years now, and they still are still at stage one, or stage zero, I would say. So how do you really solve it? And so here, I think you really got to understand. So the good news about medical devices, this is where the uniqueness of medical and some of these ICS and IoT devices come. They're configured very differently on the network. They are hardened very differently and they're connected very differently. So if you really analyze it with something like the MITRE attack framework for that device in that environment, you will find that the path for the attacker is much more difficult and different than compared to an average IT device. It's much harder to reach the device in many cases. There are only certain paths for the attacker. And this changes from environment to environment. So if you do the analysis on how can an attacker take advantage of my device in my environment, you will find there are only so many things that the attacker can do to take advantage, right? And there are probably 5 or 10 exploit parts that are critical in that environment. And so what you can do if you can't really segment, but if you still have the NAC or the firewall, you can apply targeted policies, which are not segmentation, which are specific, simple policies you can apply on the devices, on the network. That's option one, that can minimize the path of an attacker or mitigate the path of an attacker so they can't really take advantage of the device. Option number two is some of these actions can be taken on the device itself, because a lot of what causes the device to become exploitable or attackable, if there's a word like attackable by an attack potential attacker, really can be mitigated on the device itself. And so some of those you can verify with the manufacturer. In almost all cases, our experience is that based on what we do this a lot, automated, and we have found that none of those are really required for the clinical operation of the device. So you can also take actions on the device if you have absolutely no capability on the network. And so you really don't have to do segmentation, micro-segmentation. I still say if you can do it, you should do whatever you can, but you don't have to do it and break your head over it day in and day out. You can effectively block the exploit vector parts on the network or on the device. And wherever you can do segmentation, you can add it as an additional layer on top of it to really make sure you're secure.
Shankar, over the years, I've done a few desktop exercises with executives from across the healthcare system. And as we exercise those incident response plans, invariably, and because I have a special affinity for medical devices, I always throw that one in, and the eyes glaze over and the stares go blank. So how do you recommend provider organizations plan an incident response program as attacks against these systems are increasing, the medical devices? And not only plan it, but how do you execute it?
Yeah, good question. So basically, there are two parts to an incident response program, right? So one is really the process, and one is the technology. And both are important. I've seen a lot of health systems where they just have a process. On pen, they will say, when an incident occurs, we will contact legal, legal will contact FBI. But that is good, but it doesn't really solve the problem. You really haven't responded to the incident. You have just informed people that an incident has occurred. So that's, but you need that because you need a chain of command. You need to know who does what. What is the role of networking? What is the role of IS? What is the role of clinical? You need to know everybody's role in this when an incident occurs. And you need to know who reaches out to the regulatory, under what places you reach out to the regulatory. And so that is the first piece. You got to have the process in place to know who does what, how does your incident response work, who would reach out to regulatory, what is the scale of the incident, and different escalation paths. The other piece is really, I wouldn't call it, maybe call it the technology, maybe it's really the problem solving. I was having this interesting discussion with someone very senior from Mandiant, and I asked them, what's the number one problem when you get called for incident response? And they told me the number one problem in healthcare, and this was with respect to healthcare, is lack of data. Organizations call us, they have absolutely no data, and they are asking us to find the root cause of the problem. You cannot scrape the devices for data. So what do? So we spend months, weeks and weeks just trying to get data by the time the attacker has left. So we really finding a needle in the haystack. So you really need to have an ability to capture data at the time of the incident. If it's on the network, it's still immensely valuable data. If it's on the device, that's another thing. You can do that. If you can, that's going to be very challenging. But you've got to be able to capture data at the time of an incident, at the time of an anomaly, at the time of a threat on the network and store it, because 50% of the cost that these incident response forensic investigators actually charge for is actually data collection. And that was a startling fact that I actually gathered recently. So if you are spending 2 million, 1 million is just on data collection because that's the amount of effort they have to do. And then the remaining million is just to do the root cause and find the symptom. If you can solve the problem, you really are leapfrog. You can move faster. You can find the attacker faster. An average attacker only stays in the environment for 48 hours. You can capture the attacker data faster. You can move faster. You can restore your systems faster. And you can spend a lot less. So you really need that ability and then some ability to analyze it and get it. So it's really the process that you have to set, but it's also the ability to capture some forensic analysis because the statistics around that are alarming today. And if you don't have that capability, you're putting yourself in a deep.
I'm going to go from the back end, the incident response, to the front end. And at our AHIS forum a couple of weeks ago, our opening keynote, actually, her address was IR is for intentional resilience, not incident response, because the best incident response is not having to do one. But how do you get ahead of the security curve as new devices are getting connected and brought in? And now it may not even be devices on the hospital end. It may be wearables. It may be things patients want to connect to their chart, and all that is going to have some impact. So what do you need to do to avoid having the incident response?
That's a great question. So yeah, I mean, there are two things you have to do. A lot of people think that the responsibility only comes in when the device is connected to the network. But the reality is your responsibility comes in the moment you start talking to the vendor about the device. That's where your responsibility starts, because otherwise you're always chasing the problem. And so I think the first step you really have to do is you've got to start at the pre-procurement or the procurement process. And you've got to look at the device at that stage, understand what kind of device you're buying, what is the security implications of that, what kind of a configuration guidelines you have to put in place for that, what kind of security hardening guidelines you have to put in place, what kind of mitigation controls have to be in place as soon as the device is connected. So that's one very big aspect of it. The procurement risk has to be put in place even before you connect a device to the network. Your controls have to be in place. Your configuration baselines have to be in place. That's one. The second thing is, I think you need to think about some level of standardization across your network that people don't even know how the devices are connected. There are certain models, certain configurations. You can say, these are the ports that I'm going to allow. If it's outside of these ports, I'm going to effectively have an alert. So you're going to have certain configuration guidelines. So you have some, you can't standardize medical devices, but you have some idea of how these devices operate. And then finally, I think if you have a monitoring right at the source, as the devices come up, you monitor which new devices are coming to your network. You don't have to wait for the problem to occur. You don't have to wait for the vulnerability to show up. You can actually preemptively start taking action. So the answer really lies in doing two pre-procurement risk analysis, doing risk analysis there, doing the risk analysis before the device is connected, and then monitoring the devices even before they actually start showing the vulnerabilities.
And I've got one last question for you, Shankaran. You have been out spreading the word for many years now, and a lot of healthcare providers are actually figuring out this is an issue. We're seeing a great uptick in it. But for some of our providers, particularly the smaller ones or those that haven't been able to get the attention of the executives, what's the first thing they need to do to get this built into their programs? How do they convince executives and raise awareness within their own organization about these issues and concerns?
Yeah, I think, it is a hard problem because smaller organizations have limited budget. They don't have to eat the entire piece together. They don't have to say, I'm going to solve all of these 10 things. I'm going to solve resilience that you mentioned, vulnerability, inventory, anomaly, threat detection. You don't have to throw the kitchen sink at it. You break it chunks at a time. You effectively show progress in small little chunks. A lot of people will spend $5 million on a net NAC solution and they'll say, here is, and then the management will ask, where is the return? If you break it into small chunks, you spend a small amount of money on, say, one piece. Let's say I want to gather my inventory. Then you spend a small amount of money on vulnerability management. So you can actually start showing progress in smaller chunks to your management. And that then convinces the management that you're moving forward. That's part one. And again, you got to go back to the thing on how do you get budget. So it's a combination of what I mentioned on how do you get budget. But in smaller organizations, it's also about breaking it in chunks at a time instead of trying to eat the entire elephant. And I think that's what you do when you're a smaller organization to convince your management that you're actually making progress, you're actually bringing down the risk. And here is the way you're bringing the risk, and here is where you stand against the rest of the industry.
Great. It's a pleasure, as always, to talk to you, Shankar. I always learn something. Any closing thoughts or words of wisdom?
Well, no words of wisdom. All I say, this is a multidimensional problem. It's not as simple as put a solution, here's a silver bullet, and everything is solved in the world. I think this is security is a continuous process. So also remember to all the readers that what you do today has to continuously evolve. So whomever you partner with also has to be evolving all the time, because if you're in stagnant, the attackers are not staying stagnant. So you got to think of security as an evolving journey. So you want to partner and you want to have processes that are also evolving to keep up with the industry.
Absolutely. We live in a world where doing the same thing is really doing nothing in terms of security. So thank you. I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you again next time.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Thank you.